Wrapping up a busy week with a busy Friday, May 14th, 2021 show on Connecticut Today. State Rep. Craig Fishbein, Republican, representing parts of Wallingford and Cheshire, checked in with us in the 3 o'clock hour to talk about some proposed changes to the state's so-called red flag law. In the 4 o'clock hour, we talked with an individual from the Eternal Word Television Network, EWTN, regarding a bubbling controversy as to whether or not Joe Biden, the current president, who's also a practicing Catholic, could or should be denied Holy Communion because of his past and present positions on abortion rights. And also, I had a few thoughts in the 5 o'clock hour regarding a Hartford Current editorial. Apparently, some of the far-left Democrats in the General Assembly are even too far left for the Current.
Every so often, you every so often there's hope. You know what I mean? Just when, what is that old phrase? It's darkest before the dawn. There's always light at the end of the tunnel. I mean, I say this in jest, but I do a little tongue-in-cheek here. But seriously, I see here the lead editorial on a Friday afternoon going into a weekend from the Hartford Current. Now, listen, with all due respect to the fine folks that we have on here from the Hearst, Connecticut papers, you know, the Connecticut Post, the Register, the Stanford Advocate, the Norwalk Hour, all these, you know, Meriden paper, lots of friends of mine work there, with all due respect to that. With all due respect to the Waterbury Republican, the Manchester J.I., the Day of New London, all fine newspapers, the Hartford Current is still the paper that really sets the tone in the state, as much as newspapers can really set a tone or not. You know, the editorial power of papers has been dwindling for years. Editorial pages actually used to sway people from time to time because a lot of immigrants came here. They didn't know what to think. They didn't understand the politics. They didn't understand policy. But so that's why ever since the 20s, 30s, 40s, you kind of have, you know, a little less sway here. But when the Hartford Current lead editorial says something, people kind of pay attention here. And the Hartford Current's editorial, and I made sure to look at this like five times to see if it was a guest editorial. In other words, someone they invited in to write something. And it's not. It's apparently their lead editorial here. They title it, "Democrats in Connecticut Think We Can Tax Our Way Out of the Coronavirus Pandemic. Here's Why They're Wrong." Oh, my God, Maud. Even the Hartford Current says Democrats are crazy with taxes. Oh, jeez. There's hope. And it's pretty acerbic, too, towards some of the lefties of the Capitol. They start quick. What's the best way to help businesses and residents trying to claw their way back from the devastating effects of the coronavirus pandemic? And they say, if you're a Democrat of a certain stripe, the answer is easy. Raise taxes. Ooh, of a certain stripe. This is me now saying that, not them. That's a little dig at the far lefties on the Capitol Hill, isn't it? They say, we're not arguing there isn't a time or place to raise taxes to fund what needs to be funded, nor are we against making sure those who've been able to continue earning and reaping the gains of the stock market pay their fair share. They said this isn't a straight up taxes or bad screed, but let's consider the bigger picture. And they say here, and again, folks, how long have I been making this argument? How long have I been making this argument that Democratic voters all over the state, especially here in Fairfield County, but all over the state, I'm going to show those Republicans, they supported Trump, so I'm going to vote to raise taxes, which is essentially what you people have done in a blue state that's not going to be red until we land on Mars, maybe, if then. That's the reddest Connecticut's going to get with the red glow from Mars. So the Current writes here, apparently misreading revulsion with Donald Trump and the anemic pandering of the GOP as a mandate for progressive tax policy, the resurgent liberal wing of the Democratic Party in Connecticut has decided the waning days of a pandemic are a good time to load the citizens of Connecticut up with more taxes. Oh, my God. That's a broadside from The Current. Believe me, The Current, which is hardly a conservative paper. Yes, they've woken up. Hallelujah. And they're right. What have I been saying, folks? What have I been saying? I've got to become a guest columnist somewhere. Because I say these things, and then 3 weeks later, the paper says them. What have I been saying, folks, for 6 or 8 or 10 months here? The constant bitching about Donald Trump and the GOP is no excuse for you to raise taxes. It's not. Stop calling it that. The Current says, what's on the table? A highway use tax on trucks that will undoubtedly make its way into the prices we pay for food, clothing, furniture, or anything that arrives by truck. A $50 million tax on insurance companies to help fund a public option aimed at providing quality, low-cost health insurance for those in need. A worthy goal, but why not improve the existing federal Obamacare program? Yes, a tax on digital advertising aimed squarely at big tech, Amazon, Google, Facebook. Okay, they've got a lot of money, The Current says, but again, is that going to come out of big tech's pockets or consumers who use their products? Oh, thank God. Somebody's awake at The Current. Higher taxes on the wealthy, including a higher tax on those earning $500,000 a year or more. Increased taxes on capital gains and a consumption tax that would charge higher sales tax rates based on income. Oh, sweet Jesus, thank you. Somebody is awake at The Current. Somebody is awake. Now, you know when a liberal paper like the Hartford Current, or at least a liberal editorial board, but even some the way they cover issues like taxes and like immigration, even when you see that from them, you see something like this from them, oh, my God, even they see the leftward lurch that's going on at the Capitol. Amen. Amen. The Current finally wakes up. Although at 3:33, we turn our focus to Hartford here and the state's red flag law and what's in that. Now, a lot of folks may have heard of that. There is some worry I get from gun owners as to whether the law could be politicized. There has been a move, I guess, to change it a bit, to tighten it up, some say. But some other folks say, hey, wait a minute, is this really necessary? Joining us right now, Republican State Rep. Craig Fischbein, who serves as the ranking Republican on the Judiciary Committee. Craig, good afternoon. How are you, sir?
Hey, Paul. So soothing hearing your voice.
Isn't that great? Isn't that great?
Very, very stressful day, and just, you know, in 30 seconds or so, my life is better.
Who needs legal weed, right?
That's right.
The governor could just loan me out to people.
Is there any legal weed? There's plenty of illegal weed.
Yeah,
already,
I know that. So. We'll get to that momentarily. But, Craig, obviously, you're the ranking member on Judiciary, where people say, you know, it's one of those things where the sausage is made, you know, laws are made and crafted. The red flag law, we've had one for a few years. Explain what it does in theory, Craig, and what some of these proposed changes would do. Because I get a lot of gun owners who say, hey, I'm worried the red flag law could be politicized. What's the latest?
Well, before this bill passed the House, at least, the present system, which went into place in 1999, allows, upon a complaint of, we'll say, an individual or a police officer, for a state's attorney or two police officers to swear to an affidavit that one is of potential harm to themselves or to others, and a judge would review that and issue an order if the allegations rise to that level within the papers, issue an order ordering the seizure of firearms and firearm permits for up to, well, at that point, it would be for a temporary period, and you're afforded a hearing on that within 14 days. But upon issuance of that order, guns, permits are seized, and you know, you have that hearing. This new process, or additional process, allows an individual who, for whatever reason, doesn't want to call the police to go directly to court, to file the petition, to have a judge review the papers, but then the judge orders an investigation by the police. And also upon issuance of that investigation, issues an order preventing the person from purchasing or receiving a firearm. It doesn't have anything to do with firearms that are presently in that person's possession. And the concern here, well, first of all, I think the current process is sufficient. I've seen it act well. I've seen it misused also, but that's a story for another day. The problem with this new process is that many times in these cases, seconds count, minutes count. And if somebody is fearful, for whatever reason, of picking up the phone and calling the police, once the judge issues the order to investigate, well, who do they need to talk to do their investigation? The person who went to court to complain. Now, if the person doesn't want to talk to the police, how does the officer conduct their investigation? It's sort of like an officer getting to the scene of a motor vehicle accident, seven witnesses being identified, and saying, "Officer, complete your report, but you can't talk to any of the witnesses."
Interesting. Craig, hang on. I want to get deeper into that, including what I read regarding medical professionals maybe getting involved here. Craig Fishbein, Republican state rep, the ranking Republican on Judiciary, that committee in Hartford. First, traffic and weather together on WICC. Yeah, there may be some gun owners in Wilton and all over the greater Connecticut area, Fairfield County, New Haven County, wondering about, hey, what are they doing with these with the red flag law, which in spirit is a good law. It has worked. But changes now being made to it that have some people a bit concerned. Republican State Rep Craig Fishbein joining us for a few more minutes. Craig is the ranking Republican on the Judiciary Committee. Craig, did I also read maybe correctly that another aspect of this that's trying to be changed or added would involve a doctor or a healthcare professional? Did I see that correctly or not?
Yes, and I have to admit that that's a portion of the bill that I did support.
Okay.
Because it requires that individual to have actually seen the patient. You know, not just call up, you know, on the phone, you know, that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But I got to tell you, in practicality, no doctor, no mental health professional is going to put down their practice and drive to court and fill an application. They're going to pick up the phone and call the police,
yeah.
which is the present process. So that's the present process works. I think if the word was, you know, let's just think if somebody expresses suicidal ideation in the middle of the night.
Yeah.
You call the police. You don't wait till the next morning for the court to be open to go to court. And that shouldn't be what we're telling people either. We should be telling people that when these issues happen, very tragic things, you pick up the phone, you call the police.
Yeah, and I have had in the past, Craig, a late former member of my extended family through marriage, and I remember him getting calls as a medical professional, and he would get calls from, you know, concerned family members, and I remember hearing him say, "Well, if there's that much of a concern, you know, listen, I can't see, you know, I'm away, or I can't see him yet. Has anybody called the police just for his own welfare and yours as well?"
Yeah, and that's what you should do. That's, you know, as we sit here making our public service announcement, that's, you know,
yeah.
If somebody expresses concern, you know, that they're going to kill themselves or kill someone else, call the police, please.
Yeah, and Craig, listen, I have a lot of gun owners that listen to this show, and you, of course, have been active in the maintaining the legal rights of gun owners in the state through various things that you do. I've got a lot of gun owners, Craig, that frankly say, hey, you know, I'm a little uncomfortable with this red flag law. Should they be at all, Craig, concerned with some of the changes that could come here as, I don't know, kind of a backdoor way for an angry family member to get back at them or not? Is that unfounded?
Well, no, it is a legitimate concern, because although a judge may not review, find that the papers are sufficient to order that investigation, you know, once you ring a bell, it's very difficult to unring it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, those allegations get put into other cases, and, you know, I had to apply for this because he's, you know, a bad person, you know, but the punchline is, well, okay, the judge didn't agree with you, the judge didn't believe you. They mm-hmm. they leave that stuff out, you know.
Yeah.
And I do see people's rights treaded upon unreasonably. I've had quite a few cases defending people when that happens.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Craig, finally, before we go, I'm starting to see stories now in the Mirror, I think, in the News Junkie and some other micro publications saying, oh, yeah, this marijuana thing, this may require a special session here. We got, what, about a month ago here. What's the deal with this? I have a lot of friends, for whatever reason, who keep asking me about legal marijuana. I keep telling them, cool your jets. It might take a little longer. But is there still this, Craig, as you perceive it, this kind of fissure between what some of the far-left Democrats want concerned to what the governor is willing to do with the revenues from this?
The whole thing is a mess.
Thank you.
Unfortunately, the governor has inserted in this debate the concept of social justice and directing like 80% of the potential tax revenue to communities that have been negatively impacted by the war on drugs. But it's undefined. So part of the governor's bill says, let's create this commission to determine which communities have been adversely affected, and then we're going to funnel 80% of the revenue to them. And the advocates, you know, I got to say, just about everybody was against the governor's bill,
mm-hmm.
except for employees of the governor, which was weird. Demas never testified to the Judiciary Committee. Department of Public Health never testified to the Judiciary Committee. The State Police Commissioner testified that he was in favor of it because they're getting more money for DREs, drug recognition experts.
Yeah.
But ultimately, it's so much more not about marijuana as it is social equity and justice,
mm-hmm.
which the two things should be dealt with separately if they're to be dealt with at all. Ergo, the mess.
There you go. Craig Fishbein. Craig, thanks so much. We appreciate it, and be good. Have a good weekend. We'll talk down the road, buddy. Thank you.
Thank you. You're
thanks, welcome. Craig. Appreciate it. Craig Fishbein there, Republican state rep, parts of Wallingford and Cheshire. Do you vote on your conscience? Do you vote by your faith? Do you vote as a detached politician on issues like, say, assisted suicide, abortion, and all that? It has popped up again. Some bishops now are looking at whether or not, in an ultimate case, President Joe Biden, who was only the second ever Roman Catholic president, would or should be denied Holy Communion because of his stance on abortion legislation. A return guest here. We love having him on when the issues of religion and Catholicism are in the news. Dr. Matthew Bunsen, he's executive editor of EWTN News. Yes, that's the Catholic channel on a lot of your satellite and cable providers. Dr. Bunsen, Paul here again in Bridgeport. How are you, sir?
I'm very well. How are you?
I'm good. Any surprise here, Dr. Bunsen, that now there's a group of bishops here and I guess looking at this and they're saying one thing and the Vatican is saying the other thing? What are your thoughts on this?
Well, there are a couple of things to consider right off the bat. The first is that the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith, in other words, the office in the Vatican that deals with making certain that church teaching is upheld, is sort of weighing in here with guidelines for the bishops. But even as this letter recommends and notes, this is a very longstanding problem for the bishops. You can go all the way back to 1984 and Geraldine Ferraro, when she was running for the role of vice president. In that presidential election, she was a Catholic and she was for abortion. You had Mario Cuomo, you had John Kerry in 2004, and now, of course, you have actually the second Catholic president, Joe Biden. Mm-hmm. So this is a problem that the bishops have been trying to grapple with for a long time. It has assumed a heightened urgency, though, both because of Joe Biden's Catholicism, but also because he is a Catholic who supports positions that are so diametrically opposed to the teachings of the church.
Yet, Dr. Bunsen, there are people who would listen to you and I discuss this, and I said this going into the segment before we connected with you, that would say, well, hey, I can respect what a church, a religion, what a Catholic, a Muslim, an Orthodox Jew thinks, but, you know, the president is hired by all of Americans, and should an elected leader vote with his or her a dogma, or to freely step back from that and put up kind of a wall here, a firewall, if you will? This seems to be an eternal question here.
Well, it is, and you can go back even to 1960 with the election of John F. Kennedy, and many of the same questions were asked about who's actually going to be controlling him. There was a great deal of anti-Catholicism, for example, in the 1928 presidential election with Al Smith, and then again in 1960, to the point that John F. Kennedy was almost not elected, precisely because there were accusations, well, he's going to be controlled by the Vatican. And John F. Kennedy had to be very public about that, that, no, I'm not going to be, the Pope isn't going to tell me what to do. What we're seeing, however, is that we have someone who is very demonstrative in proclaiming his Catholicism in President Biden. It was a centerpiece of his campaign and his own spokesperson, Jen Psaki, when asked about different issues relating to Catholic teaching and Joe Biden, says, well, I would remind you that he is a devout Catholic who goes to Mass. So it's one thing to be crafting policy, and it's another thing to be describing yourself as a devout Catholic and then doing things that are publicly very contrary to what the church teaches. And it just isn't the issue of abortion. There's a host of other issues that Catholics are very concerned about. And so there is the risk then of potential scandal and confusion among the faithful as to what the church actually teaches and what the bishops can allow.
Dr. Bunsen, hang on. We'll do a quick break here, traffic and weather together. And when we come back, we'll talk about what a previous pope not too long ago had to say about this. Dr. Matthew Bunsen is the guest. He is executive editor of EWTN News. More with him a couple more minutes after traffic and weather together right here on WICC. And I am sure there are Catholics in towns like Monroe and Bridgeport and New Haven and Lower Fairfield County and New Haven County and all over the state that talk about the convergence of faith and politics here. The guest, we continue for a few more minutes with Dr. Matthew Bunsen, the executive editor of EWTN News. Yes, that's the Catholic channel you may have on your cable or satellite provider. We talk about the consternation by some now that the only second ever Catholic president, Joe Biden, since JFK, may be a little too left-leaning on abortion rights and things like that. Dr. Bunsen, back in 2004, there was a memo written by a member of the church, a high-ranking member, who eventually went on to become Pope Benedict. What did Cardinal Ratzinger say back then?
Oh, that's right. This is a very important memo that he sent to the U.S. bishops, and it followed up a 2002, there's a technical term called a doctrinal note. Basically, it's a note on church teaching and how it should be applied. Both of those came from then Cardinal Joseph Ratzinger, who, of course, in 2005 became Pope Benedict XVI. So he definitely has a track record here. In 2002, it laid out the sort of the fundamental principles for a Catholic in political life. And it's very important reading for us today because it talks about the kind of incoherence that we often see with Catholic politicians. That was followed up in 2004, the document that you're referring to, in which he laid out even more specifics. And part of it is what the term that's being used now is Eucharistic coherence, that a politician, a Catholic politician who holds these positions, not just on abortion, but who holds positions that are so strongly opposed to the teachings of the Church, really should not present themselves for communion. Wasn't advocating excommunication or banishment or basically saying that if you are so publicly involved with abortion or euthanasia, which the Church considers to be intrinsic evils, please don't present yourself. And we saw that in 2008 in practice with Archbishop Joseph Naumann of Kansas City, who asked then-Governor Kathleen Sebelius to refrain from receiving communion precisely in this way. So he had a conversation with her privately. She refused to repent. She refused to change her positions as a Catholic. And then he went public. And that's basically what this letter that you're referring to from the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith that just came out is talking about as well. So there is something of a track record on this and how we deal with politicians under these circumstances.
So this would literally, Dr. Bunsen, mandate or suggest that whomever is the pastor or the priest at whatever church that the president decides to go to or does go to, and maybe in his home state of Delaware, I'm not sure, he would actually have to face him and tell him, if I'm interpreting this right, that, Mr. President, with all due respect, I cannot give you communion. Is that what it would take?
Well, the way that this would work, pastorally, this is the important part. As the Vatican officials who sent this, and particularly Cardinal Luis Ladaria, who's sort of the successor to Joseph Ratzinger down the road, is saying that the bishops really need to have a consensus among themselves, which I think they do, that this is a real problem for us. Then it's up to the bishops within the jurisdictions of these pro-abortion Catholic politicians to mm-hmm. speak with them privately, to have that dialogue, where you're trying to help them to understand why we believe this as a church and encourage them not to do so. At that point, it has to be decided what you're going to do. So, as I said, we saw that in, I think, 2008 with Archbishop Naumann and Kathleen Sebelius. So there's already precedent for this. We have seen similar actions in the 20th century in the terrible problems that the Catholic Church faced with the segregation in encouraging Catholic politicians to work for the common good, and similar processes were in place there. So it would be up to the specific bishops of these Catholic politicians. In the case of President Biden, there are really two. There is the Bishop of Wilmington, Delaware, who's just been appointed, by the way. He's Monsignor Bishop-elect William Koenig, who is in Delaware, Joe Biden's shepherd. Then you also have the interesting complication that because Joe Biden lives here now, his shepherd is Cardinal Wilton Gregory, the Archbishop of Washington, D.C., who has already pretty much publicly said that he would not deny Joe Biden communion. So he's already on the record for this. Bishop Koenig has said that he is looking forward to having a conversation with Joe Biden. So we'll have to see how this letter from the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith plays out among the bishops and then how it plays out specifically to Joe Biden.
Wow, all the dynamics here. Dr. Bunsen, thank you. Dr. Matthew Bunsen, executive editor of EWTN News. Always a pleasure, Dr. Bunsen. Have a great weekend, and we'll talk down the road. Thank you.
You too. God bless.
Thanks. Bye-bye. All right. How about that, huh?